Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Who designed the paperclip? Why are forks designed the way they are designed? How often do you stop to think about where pencils came from? Well, if you're like me, probably not very often. Well, joining us now is a man who does. He loves to think about those kinds of things. He's a master of the design process. Professor Henry Petrosky is his name, a civil engineer professor at Duke University in the United States. He's written a number of books about common objects that you and I take for granted. One of the books that Professor Petrosky has written that really intrigued us here at Open House came out a few years ago called The Evolution of Useful Things. We want to talk about that and other matters as Henry joins us now. Welcome to Open House.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
It really is interesting, isn't it? These things are everyday items that few of us would spend too much time thinking about, but they have changed the world. They've changed the way that we live and we operate. When did you first get interested in the design process of quote-unquote everyday things?
Well, I was trying to understand why things change over time, why early forks had two tines, later forks had three and then four, and sometimes five, and then they went back to four. And in trying to understand that, I came to the hypothesis, I guess is what we would call it, that things change because people are unsatisfied with things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a simple hypothesis, but then I thought, well, if this has any validity, I really have to test it. I have to look at all sorts of little common objects and see if they follow the same rule. So I began to look around my desk when I was writing about this, and paper clips, pencils obviously are things that come right to mind, and so I began to look into the history of those things.
Well, it must be very interesting to look out onto the world through your eyes. When you get up and get into each day every morning, how do you look at the world? What catches your attention?
Well, you know, I actually find myself watching the sidewalk as I walk along, and I'm always amazed at how much what you know might be considered valuable little things are on the sidewalk. Pennies, paper clips, pencils that you know we walk by and we think they're insignificant, but they played a very important role in the history of design and in the development of really our economy.
Does bad design rile you?
Yes, it does.
What's an example of something that really is badly designed?
Well, I think a lot of ballpoint pens are badly designed. I'm a pencil
really?
Person.
Uh-huh.
You know, you never know. I sign a lot of books. I'm asked to sign a lot of books. And somebody hands me a pen, and I never know whether it's going to write on the first stroke.
That's true.
And here's somebody's book that I'm about to, you know, sign for posterity.
Yeah.
And it's just embarrassing if it doesn't work. A pencil never fails you in that way.
That's true. I want to get to pencils because you've written on that quite extensively. Is there an object, though, that in your opinion comes pretty close to reaching design perfection?
Well, actually, my latest book is about the simplest object I could think about, and that's the toothpick, the wooden toothpick. I got interested in that because I figured there couldn't be something much simpler. And I do think that the wooden toothpick, especially as manufactured about 100 years ago, actually, was close to perfection. It had an organic shape. It was made of white birch, which grows in the northeastern part of the United States. And it was really just an object to behold as really perfection of the manufactured product.
Well, it's true. I mean, the design hasn't changed for all of those years, has it?
Well, it actually has.
That's
what makes it interesting. Uh-huh. That the way it was made back then was different than the way it's made today. Today, all wooden toothpicks are made outside the United States, and the ones that are made especially in China are quite inferior in the wood that's used, in the way they use the grain of the wood, in the way they shape the toothpick. It's really a big disappointment for those who look at these things, who look closely at little objects that are manufactured and mass-produced.
I guess we look at the toothpick and it's something that's you know thrown away after one use. Was the original toothpick a multi-use item, maybe?
Yes, it was. Uh-huh. I mean, the original toothpick was typically, for those who could afford it at least, was made of metal and ideally gold or silver, and it was something that one carried with oneself, just like one carried one's own knife and fork, actually, back in, say, the 15th and 16th century.
Really?
So things do change over time in quite dramatic ways compared to what we know today.
You know, you could be on the verge of a style revolution here, where we start to carry around not just our watch and our phone, but maybe our own personal toothpick and our own personal knife and fork and everything.
Well, that would be nice. I would welcome that, where people paid attention to little things like that.
Yeah. This is Open House. Professor Henry Petrosky is with us. He's a civil engineer professor. Design is his big thing, particularly the design of small objects that you and I generally take for granted. Now, Henry, I'd like to know, what is so great about the paperclip?
Well, the paperclip, and it varies a little bit from country to country, but it basically is what in America we call the gem. It's sometimes described as a loop within a loop. It's a very elegant design. What it has done over the past century is been the standard by which all improvements were judged. Hmm. There have been literally hundreds of patents taken out for improved paper clips, and they try to do all sorts of things by flattening the loops, by developing lips on the paper clip that enable it to be put onto papers more easily, and so forth and so on. But still, the standard is something that was designed well over 100 years ago. We can't attribute it to any individual. It's an anonymous design. But if you read the patent literature, if you read a patent from, let's say, the early part of the 20th century, they will compare their improvement to this anonymous design and say, we have a better design. And in fact, none of them have proven to really be better in terms of endurance. The gem paperclip is still the one that is the standard, really worldwide.
You've written an entire book about the pencil, as we've already mentioned before. What did you discover as you were researching the humble pencil?
Well, the pencil is a relatively new invention. It dates only from the 16th century. It depended upon the discovery of graphite, or what we today call graphite. When it was discovered in the middle of the 16th century in England, they didn't know quite what to call it because it was a new mineral. And this is a common problem. What do you call something that's so new you don't know its name? Hmm. Well, you call it by a name that suggests something else. And in the case of the graphite, it was something that made a darker mark than lead, metallic lead, which had been used to make lines before this. So they called it black lead originally. It was only in the 18th century that it got its name graphite, which is actually a word from the Greek that means to draw or to write, which is, I think, a very interesting derivation from really its technological function.
Mm. I've always wondered how they get the lead into the pencil.
Well, that's a key question. And basically what they do is they form half of the pencil wood. They cut a groove in it, semicircular groove. They lay the lead in and glue it in, and then put a mating piece on top. They actually call this a sandwich, and it actually is several pencils side by side, and then they saw them into separate pencils after that. That was a key thing that happened in the 1870s, really, that enabled pencils to be mass-produced in a way that could produce quality pencils that were not terribly expensive.
What about the humble pin? What have you discovered in your research about pins?
The pin, the straight pin in particular?
Yeah.
Well, before there were paper clips, the pin was used to fasten papers together. In fact, in some third world countries to this day, they use them. But of course, the problem with using the pin to fasten a group of papers together is that it makes holes in the papers. It presents a potential hazard of pricking yourself and so forth. This is what leads to design improvements, inventions, if you will. And this is what my books and my studies have been really about, is understanding this process, which I believe is universal, by the way. And the reason I look at small things is not as an end in themselves, but actually to understand larger things. As you noted, I'm a professor of civil engineering. My real interests are in large bridges, large buildings, and the same design principles actually apply to them.
Really? Like what?
Well, bridges, for example. The earliest bridges were really rather elementary things. They were logs that fell across streams, but they had their own disadvantages. Just as the pin had its disadvantages in holding papers together, so a log across a stream has certain disadvantages. One thing is it can roll side to side if you're not careful on how you balance upon it. It also can get rot. It can only span a certain distance, partly because trees only grow to a certain length. So this led what we would today call engineers to try to develop new designs for bridges that would be longer, more durable, more stable, and so forth.
Mm. So as a design mind, when you look at the humble things like the paperclip and the pen and the fork and all of those kinds of things, then extrapolate that to looking at bridges and other mass-scale design things, are there any handful of design principles that you've come down to, if you were to distill them down?
Yes, basically that we learn a lot more from failure than we do from success. When something presents to us problems or shortcomings or undesirable consequences, we seek as designers, as engineers, as inventors to try to remove those negative aspects of the design.
Based on that then, how many great things do we know today that actually came out of accidents or were actually improvements on something that turned out to be an entirely new invention altogether?
Well, there are not too many to tell you the truth. There
uh-huh.
There are examples that accidents produce, such as what we call in the United States the Post-it note. I don't know what you might call it in Australia,
but these little
sticky notes.
Yeah.
That was pretty much an accident because the glue that makes them function is what at one time called an unglue. It didn't work very well. It didn't stick. It pulled things. You could take it back off. So that was seen as a negative. But someone got this idea that, well, if we use that glue in conjunction with a small piece of paper, we might be able to use it as a bookmark that didn't fall out of place because this inventor happened to use little slips of paper as bookmarks, and he actually used them in his hymnal. And as he was singing in church on Sunday morning, he would find that these little bookmark pieces of paper fell out as he turned to them.
Yeah.
So when the second service came around, he didn't have his bookmarks anymore. Well, he's the one that is credited with inventing these little sticky notes that were bookmarks that stayed in place.
Yeah.
Another example is Teflon, what has become a very common for making nonstick frying pans and so forth. That was produced from a mystery. People were trying, scientists, inventors, were trying to develop materials that would have certain properties, and they were getting very confusing and inexplicable results, and it was only when they began to explore this that they realized, well, this was a substance that wouldn't stick to, nothing would stick to, and they realized, well, that could actually be good.
Wow. What I want to know is how we can look at the world a little bit more like you do. You were saying that when you walk down the street, you're very consumed with little things on the side of the sidewalk. And what's the big question that you ask yourself most when you are walking down the street? Is it, how does it work? How does it work? How could it be improved?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, when I see something, I think the first question that I ask, and different people may approach it differently, but my first question is, why does it look the way it does? Why does it look this way instead of some other way? Why is the paperclip the way it is, or why is the pencil the way it is? And looking into questions like that, it turns out that understanding the history is very, very important to really understanding why things look the way they do.
Yeah.
The pencil, for example, why is it the length that it is? Why isn't it short or longer? The answer, basically, is that before there were pencils, there were brushes. And these had a certain length because it was the natural length. They had the proper balance. So in designing pencils that were going to supersede these other things, having that balance was sort of taken for granted, and it comes then over to the new design, if you will.
Mm.
So understanding history is very, very important, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I've got fresh eyes. I can't wait to go for a walk tomorrow morning. Thanks for your time. It's been great to talk to you.
Well, great to talk to you.
Professor Henry Petrosky there, civil engineer professor and author of a number of really interesting titles about design, including The Evolution of Useful Things.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.